local hospitals ramp up rapid testing for COVID-19. Good morning, I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this morning, we speak with an infectious disease specialist at UF Health JAX about testing for the virus. Then later, a Publix grocery store worker opens up. He'll tell us what it's like to stock the shelves in the midst of panic buying and why he's afraid of catching the virus himself. But first, we want to tell you the latest on coronavirus, what we're learning this morning. Just over 260 people in Northeast Florida have been diagnosed with the virus. There have been 9 local deaths, 60 recorded across the state. Statewide, just under 5,000 people have tested positive for COVID-19. And testing continued over the weekend at TIAA Bank Field as well. President Donald Trump, meanwhile, has extended a voluntary national shutdown for a month, the entire month of April. And of course, hospitals in this area are bracing for a surge of patients. A field hospital is also being constructed at the Prime Osborne Convention Center. Now, here's some good news. Several local hospitals will soon have the technology to do rapid COVID-19 testing. How about that? That is pretty important. I think that we need to celebrate the good news where we get it. I'm going to vamp a little bit as I try to turn on my Bluetooth device just to make sure I can hear our next guest. It's Marco Predick, the infection preventionist at UF JAX, UF Health JAX, and he's on the line. Marco, my Bluetooth has been plugged in and charged, and I really hope I can hear you, but right now I'm not hearing programming. Are you there? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm on. Can you hear me?
Okay. As I try to reconnect this device from my home studio, we're going to try to work with the limits of our technology right now because I'm having a little trouble hearing you. This is a little tricky as we try to make this work. I apologize to all of our listeners who are trying to make this work with us. Marco Predick is the infection preventionist at UF Health JAX. He is on the line for us, and thank you so much for being with us, Marco.
Thank you for having me.
I want to remind everyone that I'm broadcasting from home today. That means we cannot take your calls. We've already received lots of your tweets, Facebook comments, and emails. If you have a question for Marco Predick, infection preventionist at UF Health JAX, give him a call, or excuse me, send us an email, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweet me at @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. So, good news out of UF Health JAX, along with several other local hospitals. You should soon have rapid testing in place for COVID-19. How will it work?
So this is in-house testing. Essentially, the way it works is you come in if you meet the algorithm to get tested, because testing kits are still limited due to high demand. But if you get approved for testing, we take a nasopharyngeal swab. So essentially, the swab most people have for when they get tested for the flu. It's the one that's uncomfortable when it goes up into your nasal cavity. And then within 45 minutes to about an hour and a half, 2 hours, we could get results back. And it wouldn't have to send them out.
And that is so great to hear, given that tests currently, people are waiting 5 to 8 days to get their results. How much will this improve us getting a handle on the spread of this virus with a more quick testing result, do you think?
Significantly, especially with, like you said, the later turnaround times. Some send-out tests take 5 to 8 days. Our health department's gotten their time down significantly, under 24 hours, so we do have to give them credit for how well they're working. But 45 minutes, a two-hour turnaround is going to do wonders for, one, being able to treat these patients correctly, get them the correct care they need, and also just determine who has COVID, who doesn't. In terms of hospitals, we can determine where to place them if they have specific areas for COVID or not. We can determine if they need to go there or not.
What criteria is UF Health JAX using for testing? What should people be presenting with certain symptoms?
We want anybody who needs emergency care to come. We are not telling people to not come if they need emergency care for COVID or other reasons, but we're using the CDC guidelines for testing. The CDC has very lengthy criteria of who meets. There's multiple ways you can fall in within that criteria for testing. And it has been working. We feel like we've been screening the correct patients. But with this in-house testing, it definitely is going to help speed up getting more tests, getting more people tested as the supply increases to meet the demand over the coming weeks as well, I hope.
And you've spoken about this on our show before. The U.S. is way behind in deploying aggressive testing around the country, and that has really hampered our response to this public health crisis. We're doing the best we can now to catch up, but we've lost a lot of time, correct?
Yeah, a lot of the time was spent, one, you have to have quality controls for these tests. So we have tests, you can send them out. The issue is a lot of organizations need to know that these tests are correct, that they're catching the patients they need. So at the beginning, I believe that was kind of the holdup, was getting enough tests to quality control the testing kits that we actually are getting in now. And the supply, the demand has sort of outpaced it because everybody wants to test, everybody wants to be sure. So I think as the supply increases, we're also going to get better at who to screen, who to properly screen, and kind of get the signs and symptoms down better so we're screening the right people. So even if there's a limited amount of tests, we're making sure that they get to the right patients.
Marco, we're hearing anecdotal reports. Some people, they can't prove it, but they think they might have had COVID-19 already and recovered from it several weeks ago. If they were to be tested, would antibodies be present in a test result, showing that they've already had the disease?
Depending on what test you use, a lot of the, right now in Jacksonville, I am unaware, some hospitals may be using it, but I am unaware of an antibody test. That is, if they test, if they do have it in the future, your antibodies could tell if you've had it. But right now, a lot of them are using what is called a PCR test, which is real time, and it's testing for the presence of the virus in your system currently. It will not pick up antibodies if you have had it and gotten over it right now, the way the testing is set up.
Okay. And let me ask you your thoughts. In addition to the rapid testing, you're an infection preventionist. Is Florida doing enough to prevent the spread of this virus, in your opinion? Governor DeSantis has come under some criticism for refusing to issue a so-called stay-at-home order for the entire state, although some communities are doing that. Here in Jacksonville, the mayor has issued a work-from-home order, work from home if you possibly can, and we saw the St. Johns County beaches finally close over the weekend after they came under a firestorm of criticism. So what are your thoughts about what we can all be doing to flatten the curve further as public health officials like you try to manage this crisis in your hospitals?
Yeah, so in terms of flattening the curve, what we can all do is stay at home. We understand it's hard and difficult sometimes, and everybody feels cooped up, but only do essential travel. Go to your pharmacy, go to the food store. A lot of the states that do have stay-at-homes, they do allow for exercise outside, so for a certain time, like a certain amount of time. So if you do need to get outside, get some sunlight, go for a run, go for a walk, go for a bike. It's just, but please stay at home as much as you can. We are trying to do as much as we can to not help stop the spread, and the public plays the greatest role in all of this by staying at home. And also, if they're sick, please let contacts who are coming to visit you, let them know you're sick. Make sure you're washing your hands, even when you go out. If you go for a run and you touched a doorknob or something that you don't know about, first thing you do is when you come home is make sure to wash your hands when you come home from anywhere. So those are some easy tips to follow.
We're speaking with Marco Predick. He's the infection preventionist at UF Health Jax. He's on the line telling us about new rapid testing protocols for COVID-19 at his hospital. Your emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is also open. Let me ask you this, Marco. We're starting to see more people out and about wearing homemade masks or doing what they can to cover their nose and mouth when they go outside. There is data to show that countries that have that widespread social norm, Asian countries, of wearing masks when you're out and about in public, that the disease curve in those countries has gone down more rapidly. And so my question to you is, should we all be now wearing some kind of homemade mask when we go outside? Would that make a difference or not? Because that is the question we get asked most commonly.
Yeah, so in terms of masks, one, nothing beats social distancing. The virus, if somebody sneezes or coughs, can't spread 6 feet. So I'd say that's your go-to. In terms of homemade masks, they will have some effect. Any kind of barrier will have some effect on a virus. And the best analogy I can give you is if you look at a tennis net versus a ping pong net. The tennis net has very wide holes, so smaller ping pong balls are going to shoot right through it. But some are going to hit the netting and are going to fall. If you look at a ping pong net, it's much smaller holes. You hit a ping pong ball, no matter what, it's not going to go through. So the issue with a lot of the masks that people are being made at home, yes, they're the larger, more porous masks. So yes, they are still providing some level of protection because no matter what, you're going to prevent some of that bacteria. If it gets aerosolized coming at you, it's going to catch some of it. Issues, it's not going to catch all of it. So yes, to some extent, these homemade masks are going to work, but it just depends on the material, the quality of it, the filtration approval of it, depending if it's a certified mask. That's going to determine how effective it will be. But again, social distancing and keeping about 6 feet away from any persons that you are unaware of their status or just if they look sick would be my go-to. And that's even what I'm doing currently. I'm not wearing a mask out in public. I'm just making sure to distance myself from persons when I'm out and about.
Okay, and let me ask you a few questions, if I could, about the safety of the hospital staff at UF Health, Jax. Certainly, we're seeing reports of other medical personnel around the country getting sick and sometimes dying of this virus. We're hearing about shortages of personal protective equipment in hospitals. What's the status of that at UF Health, Jax? Does everyone have the PPE, as they call it, that they need to as they interact with patients?
Yes, in terms of PPE here, we are working tirelessly every day to make sure that, one, we have PPE that for every staff member, that we're getting it out to the right areas, making sure that the right providers who will be seeing these patients will have the masks, the face shields, the gown and gloves that they need. We have a very good and dedicated purchasing team who is buying masks approved by the CDC as alternatives to the products we have in-house. We are making sure that we don't have to come in any single day and tell our staff we're out of any kind of supplies, which to this day we still haven't had to do. And for the foreseeable future, we're working tirelessly to make sure that doesn't happen. So yes, the staff here should feel protected and are protected. And if they need supplies, we are able to get them the supplies they need.
The hospital, unlike others in our area, you're not currently taking donations that people are trying to offer, gloves or other PPE materials. You don't need those from the public?
We do. We are working with community donations still. They should reach out to our main line. They'll be directed. We are taking volunteer donations. We are still taking gloves because there's a lot of non-essential things that have to go on in a hospital that require these supplies, and they might not require surgical gloves, but they might require cleaning gloves, such as cleaning common touch surfaces. So we are still taking donations because anything you can donate will help our organization.
Okay. And this month is expected to be absolutely brutal, Marco, in terms of the number of people becoming sick and the number of people that will succumb to this virus. As we look ahead to April, I think there's a collective sense of dread right now. What can you say about what we can expect over the next month? And any hopeful messages at all for listeners? Because this is testing everyone's ability to have hope that we can get through this with as few fatalities as possible.
Yes. So first and foremost, I will say that everybody has a big role to play in this. In coming into the month of April, if we decide to social distance, if we decide to heed all the warnings and the advice coming from the CDC, I think we can help flatten the curve. We can definitely stop the amount of cases that we would see if everybody went on their daily lives as we would. Messages of hope, I would say that looking at our local healthcare facilities, talking to them, they're all meeting the challenge as best they can. They're working tirelessly, and it's great to see how we are all pulling together in times of need. Hospitals are talking to each other, working out best ways to treat these patients, best ways to protect our staff, and that's fantastic to see. In terms of advice, reach out. Everybody has a cell phone. Reach out to your friends and family. Call them. Make sure that you're staying mentally active, talking to people. Just make sure they know they're there for you and they're and vice versa. You just want to make sure you keep that connection, because that's going to help people get through this time of social isolation. Call friends you maybe haven't talked to in a while just to see how they're doing. So those are all good tips and tricks, but there is hope. We can all help affect and flatten the curve. So that's what we're working towards. And I just want everybody to know that your hospital systems in Jacksonville are doing the best they can to take care of the community.
We have some emails for you. Here's Danny from Ponte Vedra. He emailed the show. He wants to know if his painter's mask will work or if that is not helpful in protecting himself.
In terms of a painter's mask, it just depends on what the filtration level is. That's determined by the FDA. That's kind of the issue with a lot of these masks. What you can do is try to look at the company's website and see if they have any kind of approval. All masks offer some level of protection, but not depending on the filter size and the size of the filtration is what's going to determine how much level of protection, but some protection, yes.
Okay, Don emails the show. Can Marco describe his understanding of an antibody test? There are reports a cheap and quick test could be available soon. Identifying people who have already recovered from COVID-19 would allow them to get back to work. Antibodies in their plasma could also be an effective tool for anyone with severe cases. That's the next frontier in this epidemiological saga, isn't it? An antibody test.
Yes, because if we can, so the way it works is essentially you have a little plate of gel that essentially has what will activate. You take a sample and you place it on that test, and it'll determine if your body can respond to essentially viral particles that'll activate your antibodies. So if your antibodies respond to when they're plated, that means that your body has built up some immunity to the test. Yes, that is the next great step towards this, because that's how we can start studying how people develop immunity, the effectiveness of the immunity, and move on from there in terms of how we progress to maybe protecting the population against COVID-19 in the future.
All right. Well, we'll continue to follow that, and we so appreciate your dropping in on us regularly now, it turns out, to update the public about everything that's happening to protect us. He is Marco Predick, the infection preventionist at UF Health Jacksonville. They have developed a rapid COVID-19 test. How can people access the test quickly, Marco, before we move forward?
In terms of testing, our hospital is still working through getting it set up and going live, and we only want the sickest of the sick. So if you need ED care, that's when you come. If you just want to be tested regularly, I would look into going to a testing site. If you're not sick enough to where you need ED care, go to one of the testing facilities that the city of Jacksonville has set up. So, and though they should test you. I don't know their criteria, but we still encourage only the patient seeking ED care to come, and then if you need a test, you will receive a test. At the moment, it's still working with our health departments, but shortly we should have the rapid testing up.
Thank you so much. Marco Predick, he's infection preventionist at UF Health Jacks. Thanks for all you do, Marco.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And up next, another frontline sector, grocery store workers. How can they protect themselves from getting the virus? We're going to speak to a Publix employee right after this.
Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
In the 1980s, archaeologist James Dunbar helped to prove that people and mastodon coexisted in Florida nearly 15,000 years ago. Today, he's making similar discoveries at Wakulla Springs. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with James Dunbar. We'll discuss Florida ephemera and the Spanish mission system. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, in just a few moments, we're going to speak to a frontline grocery store worker at a Jacksonville Public store and hear what grocery store employees are saying when it comes to their fears of contracting COVID-19. But first, starting today, WJCT Television is launching WJCT Learning from Home. Just turn on our main television channel and you can access an amazing range of distance learning opportunities for your kids as they homeschool right now. WJCT is partnering on this initiative with the Duval County Public Schools. Paula Renfro is Executive Director of Professional Development with Duval County Public Schools. She's on the line along with our own Circe Lenoble of WJCT. Ladies, good morning to you both.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Circe, let's start with you. People can start accessing this content on our television channel 7.1, as most people know it, today, and also online. Tell us what they'll find.
Starting at 11 a.m., they will find a three-hour block of high school programming. Four-hour block of high school of television program geared to high school students. And then at 3 till 6, they'll see some programming that works for middle school students. And then online, they'll find some links to resources to help them turn watching television into lessons and how to engage their students at home.
Excellent. And Paula, DCPS is our partner in this. This is just another way for distance learning to take place at homes, which has been a huge logistical challenge, but one the school districts are pulling off. So how will this complement your efforts?
So this is a terrific partnership because it allows students and families to engage in different modes of learning material. You know, the learning hasn't stopped. It's gone. We are now in week two, so we can integrate the standards-based instruction with multimedia to engage kids further, and WJCT is just a way to partner in quality programming.
Circe Lenoble, this is just an extension of what WJCT's mission has always been, which is lifelong learning, so this was really, I think, a natural fit for us.
It is, and it's a great opportunity to share this content not only with parents, but especially with teachers so they can integrate it into their lesson plans. And this is, you know, this adaptation that we're going through right now, kind of with the times, is just what we continue to do, and we've been doing, WJCT has been doing for the last 60 years, and fitting the needs of our community and focusing on lifelong learning. It's obvious that PBS Kids programming, you know, is for the little learners, but we want to make sure everybody is learning throughout their entire lives.
This began in California, didn't it? And it's spread to public media around the country. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It started with PBS SoCal. They got together with the LA County School District and started this. And so we just ran with it. Florida Public Media picked it up as well, and it's pretty much going station or system-wide. You can also find this educational programming on channel RWJCT World 7.4 because WGBH has decided to change. They schedule that station or that channel, and they've decided to pick this up as well, so there's multiple opportunities.
Excellent. And Paula, after 1 week of home learning in Duval County and other districts in the area starting it today, what have been the biggest challenges, would you say, for educators to make this work?
So I have to commend our teachers. You know, we really looked at week one as kind of a soft launch. Because this is a challenge, right? It's a challenge for families who may be working at home and are not used to working at home, or maybe they are accustomed to working at home, but now they have their kids with them, and they're trying to video chat, and they're sharing a laptop. So we wanted to be very mindful of those pieces, but we also have these incredible, eager teachers that wanted to see their kids and teach and be with them. And they just have really taken this on as an at-home learning. It's not virtual school. We call it at-home learning because there is a lot of blended models within this approach. And we just completed 5 days. We're in day six. We've been monitoring our systems, and teachers have begun getting into their groove, but also listening to families with some good balance between work and home and maybe sharing a device. So we've been very responsive to all of those pieces to continue school as it is, just that school.
Right. I'm living the same reality. We've got two school-age children trying to participate on their teams at home. When we spoke to Superintendent Dr. Diana Green on this program last week, she said everyone just needs to try to be patient. That's all we can do right now as we adapt to this. And CERSE, the learning at home WJCT is offering, is just one more way to do this. And it's something different. It's something new that people can access as well and during the school hours, which is great.
Yes, and we've also not forgotten our traditional audiences, which is the younger children. We've created a new weekly newsletter called WJCT Kids Connect, where we're sending out just quick, fun activities to keep everybody busy, parents and children, and, you know, all these resources and everything that we will probably continue to adapt to can be found at wjct.org/education. There's a tab for parents and there's a tab for educators. And so we'll just continue adapting and working with our community partners like DCPS. It's wonderful that they're willing to go on this with us, and we can help them with our resources and help the community.
So again, just turn on WJCT television starting today to access learning from home. And you can also get more materials online at wjct.org/education. CERSE Lenoble of WJCT on the line along with Paula Renfro, Duval County Public Schools, as we partner up on this. Thanks for all the work you did, ladies, to bring this to life. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
In a moment, we speak to a Publix employee. Stay with us. Want to talk about something that's on everyone's mind right now. In addition to healthcare workers and first responders, grocery store workers are on the absolute front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. And increasingly, they are worried that they're going to be exposed to COVID-19 as anxious shoppers flood into stores to stock up on supplies. It's pretty tough to maintain social distancing in a grocery store environment, especially if you're not allowed to wear a mask or gloves on the job. Right now, we're going to speak to a Publix employee who works at a Jacksonville store. He's on the line. Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you on the show. You do not want to give your name, and we're
Correct.
Going to respect that. So you work at a local Publix. Tell us what the working conditions are like there for you.
It is really brutal. It is worse than any hurricane season that I have ever worked through. It's almost like a hurricane every week because people buy us out of product and we can't keep it on the shelves. And even when we get deliveries, it's sold out usually by that day.
Okay, so busier shifts than ever, just given the crowds you're seeing. That's not surprising. It's also my understanding that you would like to wear a mask or gloves on your shift, but you've been told that you need a doctor's note to do that. Can you explain a little bit more about that whole dynamic with management at Publix and the conversations you had with them?
Yeah, it was very frustrating when I brought my concerns to my store manager. I'm aware that Publix corporate has an FAQ where Publix.com/coronavirus, and the very bottom section is about our employees wearing masks and gloves, and they say that Publix is compliant with the CDC guidelines, but the CDC is led by somebody who, as far as I understand, has no experience leading a public health agency, and the CDC has never had to deal with coronavirus before. So when we, you know, we put cans on the shelf for the living, we're not public health experts, but we understand the concept of an incubation period that could last up to 2 weeks. And we know who Typhoid Mary is, so the idea of asymptomatic carriers is really scary for us. A lot of us are concerned that we're asymptomatic carriers or that maybe our customers are. And, you know, Publix does a really good job having a lot of associates on the floor, pulling product forward, making the shelves look presentable. We can't guarantee that a customer didn't cough into their hand and touch products while they're trying to shop, and now we possibly have it on our hands. And even if a mask doesn't prevent the particles from getting into our respiratory tract, you know, it does prevent you from touching your face. So at least it would be some kind of measure to help protect associates, if not protect customers from associates.
But you were told you needed a doctor's note for a mask on the job. Why is that?
I think that I presented my concerns with a level of urgency, and even though my store manager gave me these kind of talking points, he did kind of come back in a way that felt like it was singling me out or making me feel like an individual case, which is like, sure, maybe I can get a doctor's note, but I know that one of my coworkers, who's a part-timer with no health insurance under Publix, she can't afford to go to the doctor to get a doctor's note to wear a mask, and she's got children, and she doesn't want to work in unsafe conditions, and she thinks she can just come in and wear a mask and everything will be fine. But I've seen reports of people being sent home for wearing masks, if not written up. And a company can retaliate against an individual, but Publix is putting us in a position where we have to look at collective action under the National Labor Rights Board.
I want to read
really
a statement. I can hear your frustration.
Yeah.
I want to read a statement from Publix we received this morning saying that they are following the guidance provided by the CDC, that they've amended store hours to conduct deeper cleaning. They've identified high touch points, home delivery, curbside pickup, and that they are installing plexiglass shields at cash registers, customer service desks, and pharmacies. They've also placed signage and messaging across the store to remind customers to practice social distancing. What's your reaction to those measures Publix is taking?
Well, that's a step in the right direction, but I think that from the vantage point of a grocery clerk, that leaves us high and dry. That leaves us vulnerable because even the touch points that are places that are like the freezer doors or the door to the back hall, they aren't sanitizing the floats that we use. They're not considering the fact that customers can be touching the very products that we're putting on the shelf. There's research that showed that cardboard can harbor the virus for up to 24 hours. That's everything coming from the warehouse. Plastic, up to 3 days. That's every package on the shelf. So it's kind of scary and urgent for a lot of us.
We are getting reports of at least one Publix employee in Miami testing positive for COVID-19, another in Georgia. We're getting lots of tweets about this, too. Here's one from James. I was just at my local Publix, and I was wondering why none of the front-end staff had no protective gear. I must admit, seeing staff handle purchases without gloves left me unsettled. Amy tweets, I just left Publix upset. No one practicing any sort of distance. None of the employees are safe. No plexiglass. Bad things are coming, and I'm not sure whose hands this is on. Yvonne, we just got back from a store at University and St. Augustine Road and felt bad for the employees. None were wearing masks or gloves. Many weren't practicing social distancing. Many patrons. Mike, I would feel better if grocery store employees wore masks and gloves. They're possible vectors for just doing their jobs. And Alvin, this worker should be allowed to wear safety mask and gloves if he wants to. Okay, so people are noticing this as they go to their store. Now, not all grocery stores, we should point out, are the same. Different store chains have different policies. Some are taking a more aggressive tone than others. Publix and Winn-Dixie are the two of the major retailers in this area. They have been encouraging social distancing. They're putting in sneeze guards. Other chains have gone farther. What's your reaction to reading about that, hearing what, say, a Trader Joe's is doing or Aldi or other chains?
I commend those retailers for doing the best that they can. I'm also aware that Freshfield Farms, they shut down the store for the clerks to stock the shelves, and then they reopen when the what we call throwing truck, when the truck is thrown, when there's, you know, everything is as best stocked as it possibly can be. Those are very, you know, proactive measures. At Publix, when there's been no milk on the shelf for 2 days and we get a delivery and I come around the corner with a float that is stacked high with the milk that somebody's grandmother needs, you know, nobody is practicing any kind of social distancing with me because everybody wants to get directly on top of me with what I'm putting on the shelf. And I don't have any kind of permission to say, excuse me, pardon me, could you please stay 6 feet away from me? It's very hard to have any kind of boundaries under these CDC guidelines as a grocery clerk. So for us, it's stressful that Publix won't do the bare minimum and allow us to wear PPE that we provide ourselves. Now, we understand supply and demand. We understand shortage. We have that very phenomenon every single day in our stores when we can't get, you know, a kind of tuna on the shelf because a warehouse is out. We understand supply and demand. But the fact that Publix won't allow us to bring our own PPE at a time when hospitals are accepting donations of handmade cotton masks and Joann Fabrics is providing DIY kits for making your own masks, it feels like a slap in the face. It feels like the company doesn't actually take this seriously and that they're actually still in denial about the severity of this issue.
There is a petition online calling for Publix employees to get hazard pay. That is gaining some traction. Why do you think Publix is taking this stance, not allowing you to wear personal protective equipment on your shift?
Well, I think at first the commonly held response among associates was that the feedback they were getting was that it would scare customers, that customers were concerned that we were sick. Now, I would say 1 in 8 customers is coming in wearing a mask. I would say 1 in 5 is coming in wearing gloves. So the more that we hear from customers who are concerned that we're not wearing masks or gloves, it doesn't seem to hold up with time that it would scare customers. It seems like the opposite is scaring customers. Because like that one listener gave feedback, you know, we might very well be vectors. We might very well be asymptomatic positive carriers or incubating the virus. And we want to do our part to flatten the curve, but our company just won't let us.
Here's another email. It's Mary in Ortega. She says, I was at Publix this weekend and shocked by how little they're doing to encourage social distancing. Customers weren't following the guidelines, and some employees told me they were not allowed to wear masks or gloves. I will shop elsewhere until Publix starts encouraging social distancing among their customers and takes better care of their employees' health. Okay, so with all of that said, are you going to keep going in and doing your job at Publix?
I am absolutely going to keep working until I can't, because my household went from a two-income household to a one-income household, and as far as I know, there's not a whole lot for rent assistance right now, so we are dependent on my income to pay the rent. So I'm absolutely going to do as best I can to keep my housing secure.
Do you carry hand sanitizer around with you as you're working on the floor, the grocery store floor? Can you use that at least?
I know some associates have hand sanitizer, but I was unable to purchase any before we had our outage. And we were out of hand sanitizer, I would say, a full week before the most intense panic buying occurred.
So none to be found right now. Well, you know what? Distilleries are making it now to try
to... That's pretty exciting.
meet the demand. So I will try to connect you to one and get you a big bottle of it, and then you can bring little bottles in on your shift. And I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that is an anonymous grocery store worker at a local Publix store. In a moment, some other news. Culpepper with an update on the NFL draft. We'll be right back.
Farrah & Farrah, dedicated to representing the injured people in Jacksonville for over 40 years. Learn more at farrahandfarrah.com or 396-5555. Farrah & Farrah's accident attorneys are here for you, here for good.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
In the 1980s, archaeologist James Dunbar helped to prove that people and mastodon coexisted in Florida nearly 15,000 years ago. Today, he's making similar discoveries at Wakulla Springs. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with James Dunbar. We'll discuss Florida ephemera and the Spanish mission system. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The latest on the COVID-19 pandemic and how it's affecting diverse communities across the world, including people being treated for cancer and those in addiction recovery.
You know, he was struggling before the outbreak, but when his job pushed him into isolation, he didn't know what to do with his day.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Emma, in Chicago, has been sick for weeks.
It would help if I actually knew whether I had the virus, so I know how careful I need to be.
Thousands of people share her frustration. They're struggling to get tested for coronavirus. I'm Todd Zwillick. 500,000 Americans have now been tested, and not everyone needs one. But how do we help those who do? That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, we are less than a month away from the NFL draft, but of course there are questions about whether the college and pro football seasons will go on this year. Culpepper has some sports updates for us, and he's on the phone from his home studio. Hey, Cole, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, the NFL draft will go on as planned less than a month from now, although we don't know what it will look like. Not going to be held as a live event. We'll talk more about that as we get closer. But with so much uncertainty surrounding how long the pandemic will continue, there's a reasonably good chance that training camps will not be able to start on time, which could impact preseason and the start of the regular season, which is, as of now, scheduled for September the 10th. And it's not just about pro football or college football. High school football likely to miss out on spring football, too, at least in part. So the same can be said for college. Now, as some high school coaches pointed out to me in the last week, high school spring football is a bit of a luxury. Not every state has spring football. There is a very real chance, though, that we could be looking at a shorter season than normal, or perhaps a season that begins and ends later in the calendar than ever before. So things continue to be in flux, so stay tuned.
Yeah, we will stay tuned. It's so frustrating for all the athletes and all the fans. We're just going to have to keep watching it. Now, you talked a little bit last week about the Olympic Games. Tell us more about the decision to push back the Summer Games back at least a year.
Yeah, and right now we're hearing likely to be July of 2021. Interestingly, they'll still fall in the 2020 Tokyo Games, even though they won't be played in 2020. In this past week, the decision was made a bit after we talked on Monday, where at the time we thought it was going to be at least a month before they made a call. I spoke with Olympic swimmer Ryan Murphy, the former Bulls swimmer, says he supports the decision, and he actually thinks that it could make the competition tougher in sports like swimming and track and field.
100%, yeah. I mean, it impacts everyone a little bit differently. I'm fortunate in the fact that I'm going to continue to swim. I was planning to continue to swim, and so this really doesn't impact my plans too much. And like you said, I'm 24 right now. So going through this at age 25 versus 24 is really not a huge difference. I don't think the prime of my career is necessarily 1 year. I think it's a pretty extended period of time. So I'm excited for it. And you're spot on. The college guys, the guys that are on their way up, they definitely benefit from this. It's an extra year for them to train, an extra year for them to get confidence. And, you know, those guys are going to be really good come 2021.
I wonder, too, about older athletes who are on the other end of the spectrum in terms of how they prepare, considering there won't be an Olympics this year for them to point to, so it's going to extend out that training window. I wonder if maybe those guys, men and women, will be able to train differently for the Olympics next year.
Yeah, it's all going to be really interesting. I'm definitely interested to see how all this turns out, because there's probably a lot of people that if they had known they would have had to go 5 years from the last Olympics, they might have retired 3 years ago. And so now it's like, you know what, we're a year away. We're going to keep on rolling after this. And so I just think the level of competition is going to be that much greater, just because you've got people extending their careers a little bit more on the back end. And you've got the young upstarts being able to hit their stride when this comes around.
I think the question on everybody's mind right now is, have you seen Tiger King yet?
I have. So I literally binge watched it over the past 2 or 3 days. And it's wild. And I love what the Jaguars did. I saw they put out that tweet with Minshew. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's cool. It was an absolutely wild documentary. I mean, that was going on in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah.
Like, that's unbelievable. Like, that's not even like that far away that there's people like that.
I sat there watching it and just going, these are actual humans who really exist. It's unbelievable.
I know. It's like Joe Exotic sitting there. He's literally petting a lion. Like, what the heck? Like, that's an absolutely, that's a different beast right there. I mean, the animals and Joe Exotic.
So that's the number one winner of the entire COVID-19 situation is Tiger King, which is
yes.
A little bit of my scrub on Netflix.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, we've got to get our laughs where we can and our diversions from this. So you have one more thing you want to point out, people that are trying to help each other around town.
Yeah, and I would say, Melissa, as we're covering sports in this new reality, we found a number of inspirational stories about people helping people amid the coronavirus crisis. So if you know of a story that, especially if it has a connection to a sports team or a coach or a group, people who are helping people, let me know. On Twitter, @ColePepper. We've had some great stories, including one of a local running group who raised money to buy meals for kids who couldn't get to school to get their free lunches. So those are the kind of stories that we're going to be looking at while there are no competitions going on for the foreseeable future.
Excellent. Again, just tweet Cole at Cole Pepper and let him know. So always good to talk to you. Thanks for calling in. See you in person hopefully soon. Thanks, Cole, for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, that's our show. Thanks so much for being part of our special remote broadcast as we transition this way. Heather Schatz is our producer. Josh Torres is show director. Jessica Palumbo is station news director, and Bill Bortsfield is digital editor. And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Keep calm and flatten the curve. We'll get through this together. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.